Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. And we encourage you to join us every week. We encourage you to listen to us on the stream at richarddugan.com and newspress.com, as well as rebroadcast on A-Z.fm. We archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. So lots of opportunity, as we always say, to let you know about what's going on in our world, if you will, with our guests. And so there you go. I think that's sufficient information for you. So please join us each week and go to our archives page and listen to the interviews that we've done. There's also a secondary interviews page, if you will. It's extra interviews. It's interviews that I have done. I've gotten ahead considerably. And so you can go there and listen to interviews that will have not made it to the airwaves yet, but will. And you'll be able to hear it before anybody else on terrestrial radio. So we encourage you to do that. It's so great to be with you. I'm so excited to have as my guest here on the program, Lorraine Flaherty, and we're going to be talking about healing. Healing is a big issue in our world today, in our country today, and maybe in your life today. I can tell you that at the beginning of 2014, I went in to see my physician. I had the usual physical, the blood test, all of the other fluids checked. I had the points in the condensers. I had the spark plugs changed, and I liked it so much I took my car in. Anyway, I was diagnosed with a couple of things, but the doctor says, I'm not going to give you any pills because I'm going to prescribe for you basically that you need to exercise and you need to drop a few pounds. Now, I'm not overweight. My wife would admit to that fact that I am not by no means overweight, but it would behoove me to drop maybe 15 pounds, get back down to the weight that I was maybe 16 years ago, which is not unreasonable. Shift down from a 38-inch waist to 36. That would be nice. And we're going to talk a little bit about this aspect of it, but from a little different perspective, as we often do here on the program. And Lorraine, thank you so much for joining us on the program. It's great to have you here on Tell Me Your Story.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be here.
I'm going to basically conclude, Lorraine, that when you're talking about time and space, you are speaking about more the past lives that we've lived prior to this present existence rather than necessarily going back into our childhood. Because I remember in the 80s and 90s, that was sort of in vogue that, you know, you went back and you dealt with your childhood issues, whether it was your parents or your siblings or you were bullied in school or wherever it was that the trauma, the things took place. And in some instances, early on, you know, you'd blame your parents. They, you know, it was the parents that were at fault. And I always thought that that was a little unfair because in many cases, and I would put my parents in the same category, my parents did the best they could with what they knew at the time. How can you hold somebody responsible for what they didn't know?
Absolutely. And as I said, the work that I do involves kind of a multi-layered approach, really. I mean, I'm all about getting people to achieve inner freedom. And that means that you have to deal with the current life stuff as well as the other stuff that comes from further back. So the past lives and the issues that came from there. But what's really key, I believe, and it's very much an essence of my work, is getting people to get to a place of personal responsibility and understanding that at a certain level they agreed to experience these events in their lives. So they would have chosen the family that they came into because they would provide for them the exact lessons that they needed to learn, the exact situations and the possibilities for learning and growth for them. And it means that when we understand that and when we explore the agreements and the life lessons that we chose to learn, we stop blaming other people. We stop blaming them for what we perceive that they do for us, mm-hmm. or do to us.
Yeah.
And we accept that somewhere in the grand scheme of things, we chose it, and that these people are just volunteers in this journey of our life, serving a purpose to help us. So I really believe that the people that provide us with the greatest challenges and the greatest adversity are often our greatest supporters, because we learn the most from them. and they're the ones that help us to grow the most. So I'm all for taking away the idea of blame and actually having gratitude for those souls that help us to grow.
I would agree. They have brought us to the place where we are. We are who we are because of the experiences that we have had. We wouldn't be who we are today if those things, and you know, people talk about, well, gee, if I could just get rid of that part of my past or that part. Well, then you unravel everything and you are no longer the person that you were before you pulled on that thread. So it's important for us. It seems like two very important aspects here. Number one is to acknowledge, to be aware of the issues that you have to deal with. Number two is to accept your life and its experiences, both this life and in the past, for what they are, because they are what has made you who you are today. When you go back and talk to your clients, people that you're working with, it may be in workshops and so forth, do you find a lot of folks who are very, do they seem to be relatively open? I mean, nobody really comes to you who is resistant to the process, I would think.
Yes, they don't come resistant. Some people come with concerns. I think that still to this day, I think hypnosis, people tend to be a little bit afraid, thinking that I'm going to be able to control them or make them do things that they wouldn't want to do, or that, you know, it's almost like a truth serum, that they're suddenly going to reveal their secrets to me. And I sometimes feel like I disappoint them when I tell them that hypnosis is actually a naturally occurring state and they're going in and out of it all the time anyway, every time they daydream and before they drift off to sleep. So the state itself is very familiar. And once I reassure them that actually it is a natural process and that they're fully in control all the way through and that there is nothing for them to be concerned about, they will experience the past life memories in the same way as if they were recalling like an old holiday memory or something that had happened to them in this life. And as soon as they know how the process works, and when I let them know that they can trust me and that I'm only going to be guiding them on this process that they will be in charge of and in control of, then they relax. And I always point out that the best state for them to be in is curious, because they have no idea where they're going to end up or what information is going to come through. And curiosity is a really good state to be in. And it's quite funny, because in my experience, it's always the clients that are a little bit concerned that they might not go anywhere or they might not experience anything who have the most profound sessions.
Mm. I think that being curious, I think that can be such a powerful experience for people. And I think that being curious about what we're talking about here is also very beneficial. We're talking with Lorraine Flaherty. She's the author of Healing with Past Life Therapy. She has also produced a couple of CDs, Inner Freedom 1 and 2, and she also has a website. Tell us, what is your website address?
It's innerjourneys.co.uk.
innerjourneys.co.uk.
Yeah.
I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We want you to stay right where you are, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. We are talking with Lorraine Flaherty, the author of Healing with Past Life Therapy. And I'm wondering, Lorraine, in the context of our conversation here, what has been the reception of your colleagues or other people? Because you have to have interaction with the medical community there in the UK even. In terms of, I mean, it's not like you're trying to go around and heal everybody, but you're just trying to provide people with another option. So what kind of reaction are you getting from the medical community, we'll call it the Orthodox medical community or traditional medicine, there in the UK?
Well, it's very mixed. When I'm teaching the clinical hypnosis course, I tend not to, in fact, I don't even really mention the esoteric stuff, the past life work. But there are more and more doctors now that are starting to really recognize and understand that it's really important that they deal with these other aspects of a person. And in fact, a very good friend of mine is a psychiatrist, and she absolutely supports the idea of past lives. And in fact, I've done quite a few sessions with her that have revealed incredible sort of stories that really helped her to make sense of particular things that were going on in her life. So more and more, and we now have one of the schools that I trained with, they've now set up a society specifically for doctors who are now training in past life regression and energy clearance work. And even in the field of mental health, they're starting to realise now that there are so many deeper aspects to a person than you know, we've been led to believe. So it's mixed.
Well, I think it's a good thing in terms of, you know, again, people are being given these different options, and it's making a difference. It sounds like
yeah.
you're having quite an impact.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the reasons why I put my book together was because so many incredible transformations happened for my clients as a result of not just going back and seeing who they were in their past lives, because I never do it just as a, you know, who was I, but I always do it as a therapeutic journey. And so they go back, they find the source, the origin of the challenges or the patterns that keep repeating in their lives, the lessons that they're supposed to learn but haven't quite yet. And when they get to that space of understanding, so they see who they were in the life, but at the end of the life, when they leave the body and I take them into a transformational healing space, they then get to meet with all of the people that were with them in that life and find out why they were there, what the plans were, what had they agreed to work on together. And again, often when they come across these people that were their sort of, you know, their enemies or the people that hurt them in some way, and they get the understanding of exactly why they were there playing those roles, they're then able to forgive. They're able to understand it, and they're able to let go of resentments. They're able to let go of blame. And these souls that they're forgiving are also able to let go of the guilt that they've been carrying. Yeah. And that forgiveness goes a huge way towards healing, because they're healing themselves. It's like a ripple effect. They're healing all the other people that were involved with them in those lifetimes. And it lifts the soul. It lifts the energy when they release it. As I say, this work, it's a bit like feng shui for the soul. It's a bit like clutter clearing. You know, they're clearing out all that stuff that they don't need. And there's a real sense of freedom and peace that comes from doing that. So it's very powerful. And when people came back to me after, you know, weeks, months after the sessions, so many of them reported that their lives really, really transformed as a result. Relationships changed, their work situations changed, their whole outlook on life changed. And as I was telling people these stories, many people would say, wow, that reminds me of what goes on in my life. Do you think that there might be something similar, or that I might be holding a similar belief? And again, it enabled, just by hearing these stories, it helped people to make sense of their own lives and the things that they'd been experiencing. So it's why I put the book together, because I wanted people to really understand just how powerful this healing modality could be.
Well, I know that there are all kinds of modalities. When you talk about forgiveness, I would even throw in there, of course, you have to get through forgiveness first in order to get to this next step that I think is real important, and that's gratitude.
Yes.
You're freeing yourself up when you're giving yourself forgiveness, for one, as well as others. But then you can start to build on that open space. You've cleared that out. I like the term you use, feng shui. My wife and I are in the process of clearing out a lot of stuff. We've lived here in Santa Barbara for 8 years, and we finally went through a bunch of boxes that we hadn't opened up since we moved here. Some people
right.
have the theory that, well, if you haven't opened it, you might as well just throw it away, because obviously you didn't need it. Well, it was, I think it's still wise to go through it, but make sure you go through it and get rid of some of the things that are there if you can. We did. I mean, we can almost play handball under the house now. There's so much room. But we're doing that. I'm going through some archives of programs that I did years ago. And it's interesting to listen to them and then decide, okay, do I want to keep this? Do I want to transfer it and digitize it? And of course, then what do I do with the materials? Because I want to be responsible in that way as well. But I don't want to hang on to them anymore. And we're doing that with a lot of things. Clothing. I mean, how many shirts do I really need in the closet? You know, I can only wear one a day.
Absolutely.
You know,
I think that we go through life accumulating. We accumulate ideas, we accumulate thoughts and beliefs about ourselves, but we do accumulate stuff. And for so many people who have unresolved issues, or there's you know, trauma buried deep within them, things that they haven't been able to deal with and process. And of course, rather than bring it to the surface, look at it and deal with it and allow it to heal, people will self-medicate. And they may medicate with food, they may medicate with alcohol, it might be drugs, it might be shopping, it might be gambling. You know, most of the addictions that are out there are purely designed to distract us from the stuff that we need to address. And of course, then the addictions and those things that we hold on to create their own problems, because they create chaos in our life. So I do believe that it's far more important to clear the space energetically around you, and absolutely right, let go of the things that you don't need. And that goes for the mental inner clutter as well.
Well, and of course, we have these wonderful plans and dreams, things that we want to do. And part of that actually really requires that we hone this stuff down. I have to tell you, I've shared this on the program many times. When we moved from Phoenix, Arizona to Santa Barbara, California, we had a moving company come and do it for us. And the way that they charge you is by the pound.
Right.
We moved into they loaded up a cab over 18-wheeler from front to back. It was full.
Wow.
9,000 pounds of stuff. Now, one of those items, yes, it was a piano, but a piano isn't that heavy. And I'm just thinking, okay, so if we choose to move again, how much of that will have we have gotten rid of? I mean, 9,000 pounds of stuff.
Yeah. It is quite incredible when you stop and take stock of your life and what you've accumulated, people, things. And for me, the trouble is that a lot of people think still that if they have more stuff, or if they have a better car, or a better home, or the latest TV, or the latest gadgets, that is going to bring them happiness. And there may be a short-lived buzz that people get from acquiring something new. But for me, happiness comes from the inside. And that when we're happy on the inside, it really doesn't matter whether we have that stuff or not. It's an additional bonus, but we don't need to have it. And that self-happiness means very much, I think, that less is more in all things. And sort of keeping things simple, I think, is quite important.
Tell me about how you came into this, awareness that you had these abilities, or this ability to help people by bringing up, by going back into their past lives that helped to release the fears and all of the anxieties, to get rid of the clutter, as we've kind of said here. How did that all happen for you? What was the catalytic moment, if you will?
Well, my spiritual path had been going on since I was really, really young. And I chose to be born into an Irish Catholic family. And even at a really, really young age, when I was 9 or 10, things, maybe even younger, things that they were telling me and wanting me to believe didn't ring true for me. That on the one hand, I was supposed to believe that God was all loving and benevolent and, you know, he was our father and was going to take care of us. And on the other hand, if we did something wrong, we were going to be punished and go to hell forever. So my search for the kind of truth about who we were and why we were here and what was religion all about started really young, because I was challenging the Catholic Church. And of course, what I learned through my studies was that all the religions of the world tended to have a similar origin. There was a similar message at the beginning, but then it all got changed as time went on. And I found that the esoteric sides of those religions made a lot more sense for me. So the Sufis and the Kabbalists and the Gnostics and the Native American Indians. And of course, all of them had traditions where people would meditate, where they would go inside and they would connect with the Godhead within them. And that stayed with me. And I was constantly seeking, trying to find the means by which I could do that without having to become an initiate into some religion or secret society. And I almost stumbled at a crossroads at a point in my life when I was at a crossroads and I'd asked the universe for a sign to show me what I should be doing and where I should be going. I ended up doing a course on neuro-linguistic programming. And part of the course involved doing hypnosis. And it was like a eureka moment, because the first time I put somebody into hypnosis, it felt like it was something I'd done forever. And I knew that then was the key, because even though I'd tried meditation for many, many years, it was quite difficult as a Western person to quieten what they call the chattering monkey mind. And so I thought, as so many people do, that I just wasn't good at it, that meditation wasn't for me. But when I got involved with hypnosis, which is the same state really, but it's a kind of active process, because you're engaging your mind in the process to go help you to look for information or to make changes, to listen to the positive suggestions that are being made. And it all just made sense. It made absolute sense. And I was then able to tie in, once I'd done my training, the two aspects. So getting people into that state and then getting them to investigate and explore who they'd once been. I'd always believed in past lives, and I'd always believed that I'd been here before. And I think probably as a child, I could remember my past lives and always talked about when I'd been here before, as I think many children do. But most adults just tend to think that they're fantasizing or daydreaming, so they write it off.
Mm-hmm.
And because it just made complete sense, I've just been passionate about it and learning everything I could about it ever since, really.
Well, first of all, I must commend you for coming into an Irish Catholic family. I was born into not quite the Irish part of the Catholic family, although Dugan is not bad. And I actually worked for 15 years in a Christian radio station where I even questioned. I I took this position that if I was going to be labeled a heretic, I was going to wear the H proudly on my chest. Because a lot of what I was being told didn't make any sense. It was like oil and water. It just wasn't mixing. And I thought, this doesn't make any sense. A loving God, and yet here you are saying that God let this happen in our present day because, well, wait a minute, that's contradictory to a loving God. And then, of course, the justifications and et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, a lot of the different issues, just like you dealt with, and I think that that's real important. It may sound kind of strange, but I kind of lean towards that slogan of the 60s, always question authority. You know,
I've done that all my life.
And I'm sure that's gotten you into trouble from time to time.
Absolutely.
But by the same token, it's also, I'm sure, been very, very eye-opening, very enlightening, and it's given you that ability to, sort of ask the hard questions. And I've always loved doing that. And I've had the opportunity to ask the hard questions of a Catholic Monsignor at a local church in Phoenix, and it was a very good conversation. It was very friendly. There was no animosity or anything of this nature that I was wrong. And I was shocked at the answer that I got from him. I mean, it was a very honest answer to the questions that I was asking. And I thought, wow, that means that he, even as a Monsignor, you know, does not automatically just, you know, toe the party line. I mean, he's got his own way of thinking. And I think that's one of the things that has been so intriguing to me is that in spite of what denomination you might have over your door, people seem to be thinking for themselves more than not.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that's happening, because I know when I first started doing this work, which was about 13 years ago now, 14 years ago, that there was a lot more skepticism and people tend to poo-poo it. They thought it was just, you know, it was all a bit weird. But people have become less satisfied with religion. And I think that they are much more wary. They are much more willing to explore other options because the traditional route hasn't actually been very satisfying for a few years for people. And so they are starting to question. They're starting to question who they are, why they're here. And I think that, again, you know, 2012, everyone's talking about the shift. But I do think that people's eyes have opened quite a lot. And I think that many more people want the truth, and they want something that makes sense to them on all different levels. They're not prepared to do the blind faith that we used to do before. And the churches nowadays are not able to provide the same levels of safety or security that they used to before. You know, there's no longer a belief that if you go to a church that they can absolve you of your sins and help you to communicate with God individually or you know, through them. I think now most people are starting to get a sense that they are divine beings, that we're all spiritual beings here having a human experience. And pretty much whatever the question is, the answer ultimately is love. You know, we're made of love. We come from love. You know, the thing that would resolve most of the world's problems was that if we took care of ourselves and took care of each other and we just loved each other, as, you know, Jesus was supposed to have said, love one another as you would have them love you.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if we did that, if we all just, and I think this is one of my childhood questions, why can't people just be nice? Why can't they just be kind to one another? And I remember my father saying, but life isn't like that. And me saying, well, why not? It seemed like the simplest thing in the world to me.
Exactly. I mean, I still ask that question today, and I have to catch myself even, you know, from time to time.
And I think that the, you know, organized religion has lost a lot of followers because of a lot of the things that have come out and because they don't necessarily, you know, traditionally, religion has not necessarily been very kind.
Yeah.
And when the premise of it is supposed to be about love, then so many people are looking at it now and saying, this doesn't make sense. And because it doesn't make sense, they're much more willing to go out and find something that does. And when they're being taught that you are more than they will have you believe, that you are incredible, you are unique, you're an amazing being here going through this life, and yes, you have challenges, and no, you don't get everything right, but that's okay because you're on a journey, and we go into acceptance and love for self and love for each other. And I think that's pretty much why we're here and what we're here to learn.
Well, I know that as we talk about reincarnation and we talk about past lives, because that is basically reincarnation, I know that there was a period of time in my life when I used to tell people that, you know, because I really hadn't looked into it that much, so I really didn't understand it that much. And I used to tell people, well, if reincarnation is really true, it really doesn't matter because we're living this life here and now. But the more I began to research it and understand it, and especially reading books like from people like Ruth Montgomery and Edgar Cayce, I began to understand that there were other people who were very learned, they were very scholarly, and yet they accepted this concept. They weren't just a bunch of flakes that, you know, just got off the boat yesterday. I began to realize that there's got to be some validity to this. And then I began to think, okay, well, when a baby is born, we talk about how, oh, he has Aunt Jean's ears or Uncle Bill's nose or even, you know, brother, you know, so-and-so's laugh and this and that and the other thing. But then I started thinking, okay, well, if these various attributes are coming from ancestors, mm-hmm. either whether it's a generation or 100 generations away, then why couldn't the same be said for both the mental, emotional, and spiritual attributes? I mean, I guess that's kind of what I'm curious about, and I don't know if you want to even address this or not, but we get our looks, okay, our physical appearance from mm-hmm. the genes from our ancestors, right?
Yeah.
And so we might even get some of the personality traits, the behaviors.
Absolutely.
Okay. And maybe even some of the curiosity, the mental elements.
Yep.
But is the soul, is this that essence that makes me who I am and you who you are, is that also passed down, or is that uniquely, is that the one part of me that is uniquely me?
I believe that it's passed, it's in our DNA. You know, our cells are holographic. They contain, each cell of our body contains all the information about who we are, who we've been, what we're made up of. And a lot of the work that I do involves unpicking the ancestral stuff that's been handed down that is not very desirable. And often it's fears, it's limitations. So much of the work that I do involves resetting the behaviors that were demonstrated towards children. So being brutal or just not thinking that, that children were important, and therefore children being neglected or ignored or as I said, or even beaten, sometimes even abused. And I will actually get the clients when they're in hypnosis to travel all the way back along the family ancestral line and go back to the very first ancestors who responded in this way. And usually it's just complete and utter ignorance that it never occurred to them that their actions would actually have a detrimental effect on the children. The children were just seen as you know, a part of everything that was there, the same as the animals and the, you know, the things that were in the home. And they go back and they actually explain and communicate with these ancestors and say, this is important. You need to understand the repercussions of these actions. And they're shown what the outcome is of their way of behaving. They get to see the consequences of their actions, the devastating responses that these people have in their lives. And with that understanding, they're then forgiven, we send healing, and of course, 9 times out of 10, the thing that was missing was love, because they hadn't achieved, they hadn't received it, and therefore didn't know how to give it to somebody else. So we send them love, and it's completely transforming, and we then release all of the ancestors that were tied into a negative pattern, and then it means that the person who's having the session, they've broken the chain, they've broken the cycle, which means that their future ancestors no longer need to run that program anymore. And it's really powerful, really, really powerful stuff.
So then that person actually becomes uniquely their own.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal. And again, breaking those chains is mm-hmm. something else. So let me throw a biblical adage at you and ask you to respond to it, having to do with the sins of the father are passed down to the sins of the son to the seventh generation.
Yeah, well, you know, I believe it goes further than the seven generations.
Oops.
And yeah, I think it goes way, way, way. Because when I'm doing a lot of ancestral work these days, because it really is, it's so key to this, it's fundamental. And, you know, they're going back to prehistoric times. They're going back to the earliest times of man. And the bloodlines that flow through people and the DNA that is running through people's entire system, it's all impacted. It's all affected by this. So, yeah, I think that we can, you know, do that to multiple that a lot more than just seven.
Let me ask you, how long have you been doing this kind of work?
Well, as I said, my spiritual journey and learning many, many different aspects, mm-hmm. Probably going on for 30 years now, okay. Not more, 30-something years. Give my age away now.
No. I know better than that.
All right, that's all right. I'm nearly 50, so it's... So it's proud to be so, because I think I'm accumulating more wisdom as I go along. But actually, doing the hypnosis work has been just over 14 years now.
Okay. Well, let me ask you, have you had the opportunity to go back and track the progress of people that you've worked with to see where they are today?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of that is in the book because, as I said, that's why I put it together, because people were coming back and telling me about things that had changed and things that had happened in their lives that were so extraordinary. And it's just incredible. I mean, I had a client come in a couple of days ago. I saw her, I think, probably about 3 years ago for a session, and she'd come into work on something else this time, but she said that her whole life transformed. You know, she had come to see me because she was depressed and her life wasn't going the way she wanted to. She was in a terrible relationship. She hated her job. Nothing was working. And the woman that sat in front of me was in a wonderful relationship. She had a new job that she absolutely loved. She was just, everything had gone from strength to strength. And she said that it all turned around as a result of the work that she'd done in that session, because she released guilt, she released all the need to feel bad about herself, and she started to believe that she really was worthy of having a good life and that she really did deserve to have somebody that would respect her and love her for who she was, not who she was trying to be, and it worked.
Chapter 3 of your book is entitled Coincidence or Not, and I love sharing this with people, that I no longer believe in coincidence, and I don't use that word. The word that I use, that I've replaced it with, is coincidence.
Right.
And sometimes when we're going through our day-to-day lives, if I was going to use that word, I would change it and use a phrase that I've been in the right place at the right time for most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
That's just kind of how it's been.
Yeah.
Trusting the universe.
Yep.
Talk a little bit about that in terms of these past lives and the people that have come to you.
Yeah. I mean, my favorite saying is that life gives you everything you need. And then in brackets, that you may not know you need it when you get it, but it will always become apparent later.
Yes.
And I do believe that when we come down to the earth plane, we have a chosen mission. We have something that we agreed that we would work on and that we would learn from. But then we come down with complete amnesia. So we forget completely that what we were supposed to be doing. And in order to make sure that we do stay on track, I believe that we were allowed to put signposts along the way, and that people were set, people volunteered to play specific roles and to help us along the way. And those are the things that I believe create what many people might call synchronicity, or as you say, coincidence, where things happen that we can't explain. And the majority of people, if you talk to them, they've had things like that where you turn up and you meet somebody, it appears that it's out of the blue, or suddenly the very thing that you need just appears, or you're thinking about somebody and the phone rings. We all have those moments where we can't quite explain it, when they just seem too strange. And I think that those things are very deliberate. I think that they're set to keep us on track and to remind us of what we're supposed to be doing and why we're here. And I think if more people opened themselves up and looked for those events and actually paid attention, they paid heed when those things came up, then people would be able to move forward with much greater clarity, I think. I think that things would make a lot more sense for them.
There's a term that most people have probably not heard of. So, and I'm curious about spirit attachments. What are they, and are they the kind of thing that we want attached to our spirit?
Usually not. I think that traditionally people would probably know spirit attachments from another name, which would probably be ghosts or spirits.
Oh.
And for me, they are fragments of souls who, when they passed, when they died, for one reason or another, didn't actually go home. They didn't go back to the light or back to their soul group, go where they were supposed to go. Now, it may be that they didn't want to leave or to leave a loved one. It may be that there was something that was unresolved, something that they hadn't done that they were desperate to finish. Could be a variety of different reasons. They may have just been confused and not known where they were supposed to be going, especially if the life came to a very sudden end and it was a bit of a shock. And if they don't, when the, you know, we're all familiar with near-death experience where people talk about a tunnel of light and people coming down to get them, if they don't go into that tunnel of light when it opens up, then they're a bit stuck. They're trapped on the earth plane. They can't actually physically get themselves back to where they need to go without kind of, without some kind of help or some kind of assistance. And what often happens is that when they are sort of floating around in the ethers, if they come across a person who has a similar vibration to them, similar frequency, so if they died in shock or they died in fear, and somebody walks past who is resonating on that same energy of fear or that same energy of shock, then it's a bit like Velcro. They can actually latch on and kind of latch onto the edges of that person's energy field. And sometimes what happens is that if a soul or a person that walks past is a particularly bright and, you know, loving individual, so they have quite a light aura and they have a light energy field, they think they're the light. So they jump on, not because they're being negative or not because they're something horrible or want to do any damage, but they just think that that's a safe place for them to go to. And often they're not there to cause any damage at all, although some of them might be a bit more mischievous or some of them might be a little less friendly. But it's a bit unhealthy for the person who's carrying them in their energy field because they tend to be quite draining. And so what can sometimes happen is that people start to feel tired, they start to feel exhausted. And at the extreme, they can actually take on board the habits that that spirit attachment had while they were in their body. So sometimes people will suddenly have almost a personality shift where they might start eating meat, having been a vegetarian for a long time, or they might suddenly feel compelled to smoke or drink when they didn't before. And it can be quite unpleasant for the person, particularly, as I said, because they do tend to drain their energy.
Yeah.
But in the work that I do, actually, it's incredibly rewarding when we find somebody that does have these attachments on their energy field, because we can, in the session, open up a portal, a means by which they can actually get back home, and then we can reunite these lost souls with their families and with their loved ones and with their soul group. We can actually get them to go back home to the light. And it's incredibly moving. It's absolutely extraordinary when it happens, especially because sometimes they will actually talk to me through the person that's in hypnosis. They actually borrow their vocal cords for a while, so I can actually chat to them and find out what happened.
Wow.
and find out what they need in order to be able to travel home safely. So it's like a modern day exorcism, but done with love and not banishment. And there are no crucifixes and we're not casting them out as if they're demons. We're doing it very lovingly.
Yeah.
and very gently.
Are there those that are sort of stuck in, and we'll call it a dimension, in that place that are angry, are maybe rageful? They don't quite fully understand where they are, why they're there, and they can potentially exert the energies for the physical body of the person they're attached to be physically violent or aggressive in that kind of thing?
They can, actually. And again, there's a huge amount of research that's being done now, even in the medical profession, that is looking at people with mental health issues. And many doctors are starting to realize that, that people that have been suffering from what was perceived to be schizophrenia and all kinds of different issues where there were psychoses present, that it can be the influence of spirit attachments. And that once the energy fields have been cleared, many of these patients have been able to return back to completely normal lives once again. And partly we know that these attachments can come in when people are exposing themselves to excessive amounts of alcohol or drugs, so that they are not completely conscious. And especially if their energy vibration is quite low. So if they're exposing themselves to really dark negative music or really dark negative and sort of scary horror films and very gory movies and things, then their whole energy field shifts, and it does open them up for these slightly less pleasant entities to come in. But even so, even still, even those souls that are very angry, and I've come across it in my work where some of these spirit attachments really have been making out that, you know, or sounding very angry and, you know, as though they can do harm. And ultimately, again, when they're approached with great love and forgiven for whatever sins that they may have committed or, you know, they perceive they're going to be judged for, when you radiate love at them, all that negativity and all that darkness and all that anger just tends to melt away, and you find underneath it all that there is just a lost soul who feels abandoned and thought there was no hope for them. So again, it's the transformations that occur are really quite beautiful.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Lorraine Flaherty. She's the author of Healing with Past Life Therapy, Transformational Journeys Through Time and Space. Her website is empoweredlives.co.uk. That's empoweredlives.co.uk. And you have in the back of the book also a list of therapists if you're somebody's looking for one in that particular category. Obviously, your name comes at the top of the list, but that's just fine. It's your book. But I'm curious as to, you made the comment about how medical science is now studying this, and I want to maybe have you be clear on this. You said that they're starting to find that those with schizophrenia may have these spirit attachments or ghosts, if you will. That is not necessarily across the board that all people suffering with schizophrenia or even multiple personalities have spirit attachments, correct?
Correct. Yeah, there are going to be some situations where it is going to be a mental imbalance and it's going to be just something that is unexplained. These things happen.
Yeah.
But again, there are situations where clearly, and I've seen it myself, where people's personalities have transformed really quite dramatically,
right,
as a result of this work, and I've experienced it myself.
Wow.
I will always practice what I preach, and so I have quite deliberately put myself in a situation where I was exposed to energies so that I could understand what the process involved and what it required, and I even experienced a shift, a transformation in my own personality as a result of the energies that I'd brought in, and they were children that had latched onto my energy field, and the confusion and the sort of anxiety that I felt, mm-hmm, it had an impact on me, and so I can really sympathize with people that that are unaware that these things are going on, and they think it's them. They think that the anxiety that they're experiencing is their own,
right?
And it comes as a real surprise when they find out that this was something that was totally unrelated to them.
Yeah, well, there are even people out there who we could put under the category of they're empaths, in that, mm-hmm, they pick up on the emotional state, the energetic emotional state of another person. And I know of someone who exhibited that behavior or that characteristic, shall we say, of feeling these feelings. And she hadn't really gone through anything. I mean, it was she hadn't had an event in her life in that, say, recent past that would have evoked those emotions. Yeah. And it took quite a long time for her to reach that place where she realized, oh, it's not me. I'm picking up on. And how does one protect oneself? I mean, I know that that can be used as a very valuable tool in the work that you do. But at the same time, if you leave that window or door open all the time, that's going to drive you insane.
Yes. So again, it's really important, and I've put this onto you mentioned the two CDs that I have earlier. You know, I've put some exercises on there that people can do to actually protect themselves, and often just the simplest thing, like visualizing a circle of healing white light around them as they move into different spaces when they're around other people and their energies. Because yes, we can absorb other people's emotions. We all know if you walk into a room where somebody's just had an argument, often you can still feel it. You can feel the residue of that energy. And it does change place. You know, if you walk into the scene, there have been often times when I've walked into into a field that was once the site of a battle, and you can feel it. So yeah. The energy of the place is charged. It's been changed. And if you are sensitive, it is really easy to absorb that. We soak it up and then we carry it around with us. Mm. So I recommend that people do a kind of almost like an energy shower, you know, at the beginning and end of each day, just to visualize white light flowing through the energy field, clearing out and just flushing out the system. And then protection, just, you know, just a like a shield that they put up. So a protective layer around the aura and healing symbols if they wish. There's a variety of different things that people can do just to keep them safe when they're around others.
How does one begin the process of connecting with their past lives? And I guess to that question, I want to throw in that a lot of people that you hear, especially on radio shows, when they're calling in to someone who reads their past lives, is always, oh, you were, you know, Cleopatra, or you were President Lincoln, or you were Gandhi, or you were these great people. They never mention that they may have been Hitler or Mao Zedong or Genghis Khan, you know, or these kinds of things. And they're always prominent people. But where, you know, who were the peasants, you know?
Well, I have to tell you that the thousands of people that I've worked with, most of them were peasants.
Okay.
I haven't had any. I've had no Marilyn Monroes. I've had no. In fact, once I did have a client who had gone into a lifetime where she was a Hollywood actress in the 1940s. She was mortified. She was really embarrassed. She actually didn't want to tell me the name because she didn't want me to think that she was being ego-led or that she was trying to be somebody famous.
Right.
And we actually went back because she said, "Oh, I know too much." You know, about this, she was a Hollywood legend. So we did another session and we got her to go back to the childhood, really early years of this woman's life that she didn't know anything about. She hadn't read any books about this woman's life. And we did the really early years, we did the schooling, we did the sort of early marriages before she'd become famous. And then we went back and researched again, and all the information was absolutely spot on. It was completely accurate, which I think distressed her even more because she was hoping that it had all just been fabrication. But in my experience, most people go into lives that are, they're not famous, they weren't celebrities, they are people that were having real lives and real experiences. And those people, I don't do it as a reading. I get people to go in and find out who they were. And they go back and relive their past lives. Mm-hmm. I think it's very easy for people to, when they do it as a reading, or even somebody who, if somebody really had a desire and they really had almost an obsession with somebody, then there is a possibility, because all of the lives that people have lived are stored in what many would call the Hall of Akashic Records. You know, there's a library where all that information, that data is stored. So if they really, really wanted to, they could go in and find the lifetime of Cleopatra or Elvis or whoever, and then bring back that information with them and talk about it. But as I said, I think it's quite rare, certainly when you're doing it as a therapeutic process rather than just for entertainment. And the other thing that I have to be aware of is the field of quantum physics that says that we are all made up of stardust. We're all made up of billions of particles of energy that when we die kind of returns back to the great melting pot. Mm-hmm. And then when we're born, we are made up of a collection of molecules that we have no idea where they once were or who they belong to. So there is a possibility that that person who thought they were Cleopatra might have had one tiny molecule or particle that was once Cleopatra.
Yeah.
And that's their route into that life. That's the way they get in. So,
well, I was watching a documentary about our interconnectedness, not just in this present lifetime, but throughout all of human history. And they apparently were able to analyze I think it was at the subatomic level. They were able to analyze the molecules of oxygen that we breathe in and out and so forth.
Right.
And they were able to do, I think, the equivalent of carbon dating of these molecules at the subatomic level. And they found an element whose name I don't recall. And they were able to date some of these, and each atom, I guess, had a different, you know, date to it.
Yeah.
And their conclusion was, and I found this so intriguing, their conclusion was that the air that we are breathing today is exactly the same air. Now we're talking on the molecular level, even the subatomic level, it's the same air that every human being has breathed since the beginning of time. In other words, you are taking in the air of that Jesus breathed, and that Muhammad breathed, and Buddha, and yes, even Genghis Khan and Hitler and some of the other not so nice people. But I thought, wow. Because this stuff continues just to circulate around the planet. There's never been any less or any more, you know. I mean, granted, we can pollute the air. That's a given. But by the same token, those molecules are still there.
Yeah, I know. It's quite extraordinary.
It just blew me away.
But ultimately, as you said, and because we are, We're all made up of the same stuff.
Yeah.
So ultimately, we are all one. We're all the same. So even, you know, I get sometimes clients come in and they say, but what if I was a bad person in my previous life? What if I did something bad? What if I'm now being punished because of the sort of bad things that I did? And again, it's really important that people start to recognize that there is no judgment in the spirit realms.
Right.
There is no judgment about whether a thing is good or bad. It just is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the soul has to come into the earth plane and experience everything, good and bad, rich and poor, healthy and sick. There's a karmic balance. And I don't believe that karma is about punishment and reward. I believe that it's cause and effect.
Yes.
You know, you do something and then there is an implication, there is a repercussion, and therefore there is a balance needed on it.
Right.
So one of my clients, when she went back, it's interesting that you mentioned Genghis Khan, because she was one of his foot soldiers.
Oh.
And she was this, and she was quite surprised to go in and find herself a man. She was, this, you know, very, he was one of the leaders of, you know, one of the I don't know, you can call it a gang, but one of the groups that went out. And of course, they were raping and pillaging and you know, going through and conquering all of these towns and villages. And in his mind, what he was doing was following orders. He was honoring his king, he was honoring his leader, and he was doing what he was told. And therefore, there was no question in his mind. They just went in and they did this thing. So his intention was right. His intention was that he was doing the best for his people and for his king. And this had gone on for quite a long time. And in one of the villages that they went into, and this was, he was kind of getting on in years at this point, none of the men were there. The men were all out fighting somewhere else. So it was only women and children. And the rest of the soldiers went in and brutally murdered all of these people in the village. And there was something in him that pinged. There was something in him that said, hang on a minute, this isn't fighting. This isn't right. This is not how it's meant to be. This doesn't feel very honourable. And he was actually quite revolted by the whole thing. He was quite disgusted at what he saw and the bloodthirstiness of the people around him. Now, because of the way of the world at that time and the you know people that he was born into, he could not dishonour his king. And so he could not go against it. He couldn't quit. He couldn't walk away from it. And so the next village that they went into to attack, when they went in to fight the people there, he deliberately lowered his arms. He lowered his weapons. He didn't raise them. And he was therefore he was killed. But to all intents and purposes, he died in battle, so he didn't dishonour anybody. And when we took her to the sort of transformational part of the session, she was able to call in all the people that she had murdered in all of those villages to apologise because she was feeling all this guilt at what had been done. And the people in the villages said, but we chose to be there at that time and we wanted to know what, we wanted to have the experience of suffering like that, of you know, lives being cut short. That was something that our soul needed to experience. So we're very grateful to you for doing such a thorough job because it means we don't have to do that again now. So thank you very much. We're really, really grateful. And so this released a whole load of guilt and a whole load of self-punishment and beating up of self. But then I said, okay, look, because I know there's going to be karmic balance. So what I want you to do is I now want you to go to another lifetime to see what else your soul has been up to in balance to this. And she then found herself in a lifetime where she was a nurse in the First World War, pretty much on the edges of the trenches, doing everything that she could for these young men who had been wounded and shot and killed and whatever. And she gave everything, so much that she ended up becoming sick with a fever and she died. And she died saying, I haven't done enough, I haven't done enough. And there were many other lives where she was a healer and was totally selfless and had sacrificed herself for many others. And she was then able to see that actually it's just about balance. It's about experiencing everything. And so she let go of this idea that she was being punished for being bad because she saw that she'd been very, very good in other lives. So it didn't make any sense whatsoever for her to hold on to that idea. And one of the other things that I've learned as well in doing this work is the sense that actually, ultimately, we're all one. Mm-hmm. It's all the same. We're all made of the same stuff.
Yeah.
So when we make a judgment and we say, oh, you know, that person's bad or that person's evil, we're actually pointing at a part of ourselves.
Wow.
So we have to be very aware that it just, it is what it is. We can't do judgment of one is bad and one is good.
Right, right.
Because it's just all part of the rich tapestry of life.
Have you
souls have to experience everything.
Have you found that people who go through this process with you, when they started out, they may not have had the feeling that there was meaning to life, or maybe they did, and now following it, they feel a sense of meaning to life, or maybe a profound sense of my life now has meaning. Even if they don't know what their purpose in life is, they know that there's meaning there.
Absolutely. And a lot of people come to me because that is their question. What is my purpose? Why am I here? They know that there is something that they're meant to be doing. They may not have found it yet, but they have a distinct sense that there is a reason for it. And part of the work I do is to help them to realize what their theme is, if you like. Mm-hmm. So what is it that their soul group is working on? And what, therefore, are the themes that they, as an individual soul, have been working on through all of their lifetimes? Because then they understand what the theme is now and what it is that they're supposed to be working on in this life. And it's often quite simple. It may be that the lesson is just to learn about self-love. or to learn about how to love unconditionally. It might be that they've come to learn about their self-worth, their own self-value. And of course, it usually means that somewhere along the way, they will have agreed to be challenged. So I had somebody recently, her test, her challenge was to see whether she could still love unconditionally no matter what happened to her. And she had had some really, really brutal past lives. She'd had some really brutal stuff happen to her, and pretty much things were happening in this life that were really, really not great. Mm-hmm. And in that realization that she'd signed up for it, she agreed that souls could come along and abuse her and punish her and torture her. And then she still had to strive to love them unconditionally anyway. And so I can tell you, it was with great relief that she let go of that challenge. Wow. Because she said, all right, you know, I get it. I get it. And I don't need to be tested like that anymore. And she gave herself permission to just experience unconditional love and to allow it to flow, unconditional love for herself and for those around her, yeah, without having to be tested.
Before we wrap up the program, I have three final questions for you. I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program. We'll give out your website in a minute as well. Who is Lorraine Flaherty?
Oh, she's many, 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 many parts. She's a very curious soul who will not rest until she knows as much as she possibly can. She's someone who will keep learning, who will keep exploring, who will keep pushing the boundaries right to the very end.
So you'll wear the big H like me with pride and honor on your chest.
Yeah. Loud and clear.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I want people to understand that they are so much more than they think they are, that they are multidimensional beings, that they are spiritual beings who are ultimately powerful, and that they don't need anyone or anything else in order to achieve happiness. Everything they need is inside them all the time. They just have to look inside and then they'll find it.
And finally, who inspires you?
Everyone. Every single person that I meet, because everyone has a story, and everyone's story is so unique. It's so incredible. So, yeah, everybody that I meet.
We've been talking with Lorraine Flaherty, the author of Healing with Past Life Therapy, Transformational Journeys Through Time and Space. She also has a it's a 4-CD set, two parts, that's Inner Freedom 1 and Inner Freedom 2. That's pretty self-explanatory. And her website is empoweredlives.co.uk. That's empoweredlives.co.uk. And we look forward to talking with you again. And if you do find yourself in the States and you find yourself here in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to have you in studio to talk again.
I'm coming in May, so.
Well, then let's make plans to do that.
That would be wonderful. I would love to.
Wonderful. And thank you again for joining us on the program. It's been great talking with you and learning about the work you're doing and who you are.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.